Today, seeking a value anchor with Peter Schiff. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Today, I'm joined by the world famous Peter Schiff. Hello, Peter. Good to see you.
Oh, nice to see you.
Pleased that you're able to spend just a little bit of time with us. And look, Peter, it's a perfect time to have a quick conversation. Not only have you got an upcoming conversation with Harry Dent, and we'll talk about that in a second, but the markets have been all over the place this last week. And both you and indeed Harry believe that the markets are due for a major upset.
Well, that all depends on if the Fed actually carries or follows through with what it's pretending it's going to do. And that's fight inflation, because in order to fight inflation, the Fed is going to have to get very aggressive because they're way behind the curve at this point. And so an aggressive tightening campaign would involve a lot more than just slowing or speeding up the taper and accelerating, you know, tiny rate hikes by a couple of months. What we need is an abrupt end to QE, not a gradual reduction, but cold turkey. And the Fed needs to let rates go up dramatically. I mean, a half a percent, 1%, that's not going to cut it. You know, when you have 6-7% inflation, you can't fight that, you know, with a couple of quarter point rate hikes. I mean, talk about bringing a knife to a gunfight. You know, the Fed wouldn't have a chance, which is why I don't even think this fight's going to happen.
Well, that's very interesting. So do you think that the Fed really is in control, or do you think they've really lost the plot?
No, well, they're not in control of anything. I mean, they're just trying to kick the can down the road, and they're hoping and praying that there's a long enough road there so they can keep kicking it. But they've been playing this game for a long time, and that's why the economy is in so much trouble. The question is, how much longer can they get away with it? I think the fact that you're really starting to see inflation is now the number one problem, the Fed's ability to try to make problems disappear by creating inflation, that's kind of gone. They can't do that anymore. So they're really at the end of the road. And the Fed doesn't really have a good choice, right? Because either they could fight inflation and crash the stock market, the housing market, the bond market, cause a financial crisis worse than 2008 and a much greater recession. They could do that, or they could do something worse, which is not fight inflation to prevent all that. And so instead of a financial crisis, we have a currency crisis. We have runaway or potentially hyperinflation. And that's ultimately far more catastrophic for the economy than fighting the inflation. But there, you know, there is no easy way out. Unfortunately, the Fed made the bed, and now the country is going to have to lie in it.
Right. And the point, of course, is that Powell last week admitted finally that inflation was a real thing rather than just transitory. But the markets didn't necessarily react very distinctively based on what he said. So maybe they don't believe him either.
Yeah, well, I mean, first, Powell said there was no inflation. And then he said it's transitory. And then he said, well, it's transitory, but the transition is going to be longer than we thought. And now he's come out and say, okay, it wasn't transitory at all. It looks like it's here to stay, but don't worry, we're going to get rid of it. You know, I don't know why the markets would believe that either. I mean, the Fed is constantly wrong or lying, either one. You know, what Powell hasn't admitted, but ultimately I think he will admit it, is that inflation is here, it's going to get worse, and it's just a fact of life. The Fed is going to say that it's just the price we pay for our prosperity, that we have a growing economy, we have low unemployment, and we have the pandemic. And, you know, there's no way to fight inflation in this environment. We're just going to have to get used to it.
Right. And I guess that just begs the question then as to why we have a central bank at all, if in fact they aren't able to, drive the agenda and get to the outcomes they want. Certainly here in Australia, the Reserve Bank for years has been forecasting X and Y has happened. Do we need a central bank at all, do you think?
Well, I think we'd be much better off without one. I think just about every economy would be better off without a central bank. But the question is, if there was no central bank, what would replace it? And so if the governments just printed a bunch of fiat currency directly without, you know, independent central banks, although independent is really in quotes because they're not truly independent. Yeah. But even if you removed that thin veil of independence and if you handed the printing press directly to elected politicians, it would probably be even worse. So what we need is to return to what we had before we had a central bank in the United States. And that is where private banks issued currency backed by real money, and that real money was gold and silver. You know, so we need to go back to a gold standard to have honest money so that we don't have these, you know, boom and bust cycles, and we have much smaller governments that have to honestly finance whatever they spend. And that would keep governments much smaller. And of course, that would mean a lot more individual liberty and a lot more prosperity for everyone.
Right. So what you're talking about there is, what is the value anchor? What is the cornerstone, right? And effectively, we've had fiat for years and years and lots of money being created, but not necessarily stability. So that's why you believe the gold argument is such a powerful one.
Yeah, I mean, a gold standard works very well. I mean, gold is the best money that we've come up with, and it works really well. In fact, it'll work even better now if you marry gold with the internet. You know, you could easily transfer ownership of gold either just directly or through a digital currency backed by gold. Commerce can easily be conducted in gold around the world much more economically and efficiently than it was in the past. In fact, in the past, even though gold was money, if you wanted to buy something very small, you may use silver, you may use nickel or copper, but we don't even need that anymore. You could buy the smallest item using gold if you use the internet, you know, blockchain and all that. So the world is ripe for a return to a gold standard. It's way overdue. And I think that that is going to be the next, you know, big monetary movement, is going to be to reject the dollar standard and the fiat currency system and return to sound money.
So the interesting question, Peter, is whether that can be done in one country, or does it need international agreement and cooperation? And if so, how would that happen?
No, I mean, any country can unilaterally go back on the gold standard. They don't need other countries to do it. I think the countries that do it will be rewarded. You know, their people will be rewarded with higher living standards and, falling prices rather than rising prices. But, you know, you don't even have to wait for the government. People could put themselves on a gold standard just by getting out of fiat currency individually and just conducting their affairs in real money, saving real money, and, you know, just not saving a lot of government fiat. But we would all be better off if the governments joined us in this pursuit of sound money. But I know a lot of people think, oh, well, you know, let's all go to Bitcoin. You know, Bitcoin's not going to work. Bitcoin's not sound money either. It's just fiat in another form. It's believing in a private fantasy rather than a public fantasy. You know, the fiat currency has value because the government says so, but because people also have confidence in the government. But ultimately, the confidence is lost and the currency collapses. But when it comes to fiat currency, you skip the government. Bitcoin has value because the people who own it believe it has value. But in reality, it has no value, and people who believe it are believing in a fairy tale. And eventually, reality always sets in, and the people who believe stop believing. Obviously, there'll be some people that will hold on to those beliefs longer than others, and they'll unfortunately be the bag holders. Because they'll be stuck holding a lot of worthless Bitcoin.
Mm. Well, I've always said Bitcoin is more a religion than a real currency.
Yeah, well, it's not even it's more of a cult than a religion, yeah. Because you know religions are more organized.
Yeah. So. No, good point. Now you made the point a little while ago about countries could go on the gold standard unilaterally, and it's interesting that China and Russia are big acquirers of gold at the moment. Do you think that they've actually taken a forward position on this?
Well, I think they're looking ahead to a post-dollar world. And yes, I think they know they're going to need more gold reserves, and I think they're accumulating them now. They're not going to come out and say that because that might push the price of gold up. And if you're trying to buy as much gold as you can, you don't want the price to go up until you're finished buying, not while you're still in the process of buying it. So I think the Chinese and the Russians will quietly accumulate as much gold as other nations are dumb enough to sell, or other individuals or institutions who have it. But central banks are going to be big, big buyers of gold, I think, for many years to come.
And one question I have is that the price of gold is, you know, drifting around 1800 or a bit below. It's sort of gone up a bit, down a bit, but it really hasn't reacted so far. And I wonder whether this is to do with the relationship between the gold futures, which is, what, 50 times the underlying? Do you think the futures market is actually influencing the spot price? And is that one reason why gold is where it is at the moment?
Well, look, I think gold is actually holding up quite well because, remember, the Fed is tightening right now. Even though it's not raising rates, it's tightening monetary policy just in its rhetoric and in what it is preparing the markets to expect when it comes to the timetable for the taper, when the first rate hike happens. And so normally when the Fed is doing this, you would expect the price of gold to go down. The fact that it's holding up shows you that there's not a lot of downside risk in gold. And I think when gold really is going to start to move is either when the Fed finally starts to raise rates, and then, you know, gold can go up, or if they never get around to raising rates. If the Fed is forced to backtrack on its hawkish talk, I mean, so-called hawkish, because there are no hawks, it's just degrees of dovishness. But at some point, you know, the markets are going to change their view from, we have inflation, but it's going to go away because the Fed's going to fight it, till we have inflation and it's going to get worse because the Fed's not going to fight it. Or even if the Fed tries to fight it, the Fed will lose the fight. And that's when gold just is going to go ballistic. I think we're going to have a major move up in the price of gold to not only reflect all the inflation that we've had over the last year or two, but all the inflation that we're about to have over the next several years as the government, you know, doubles and triples down on these failed policies.
And I'm very interested that you know, both you and Harry Dent, who are debating tomorrow, have a view that things will change. But Harry's got a view that you know, the US dollar and US treasuries is where that value anchor is. You've got the view that gold is where the value anchor is. That's a very different sort of perspective. Do you understand where Harry's coming from, or do you think he's just got it wrong?
Yeah, I do. He's been coming from this direction for as long as I can remember, telling me that, you know, I shouldn't own gold, I should own dollars. And look, Harry's missed out on a decent move up in gold in dollar terms over that time period, but he hasn't really suffered a big loss in the dollar. And in fact, if he's held treasuries, there's been a gain in treasuries because yields keep falling. So if you bought treasuries 5 years ago, then you can sell them at a profit. You didn't earn much interest, but you can sell them and make a profit. But look, I think we're headed for a collapse in the bond market. Whether it's a nominal collapse or just a real collapse, I think is ultimately irrelevant to the fact that you're going to get wiped out if you're following Harry's advice and holding on to IOUs for US dollars issued by the United States government. I think that's one of the worst places that you could be. The problem with Harry is he's still stuck in the 1930s, and he thinks that we're going to have a 30s-style deflation. That's not going to happen. We're not on a gold standard anymore. The gold standard is what prevented the government from doing in the 1930s what it's about to do now, and that is print even more money to keep stimulating the economy and keep running deficits. So it's massive inflation. It's maybe even hyperinflation that Harry should be concerned about, not deflation. The only way Harry is going to see deflation is going to be if he measures prices in gold. So I agree with Harry. Stock prices are going to go down. Real estate prices are going to go down. But they're only going to go down if you're measuring them in gold, right? So in terms of how much gold you need to buy the S&P 500, you'll be able to buy a lot more of the S&P with your gold in the future than you can buy today. But as far as dollars, Who knows? You might not be able to buy any stocks with your dollars if the dollar is worthless. Gold's never going to be worthless. Stocks will be worth a lot less than they are now in terms of gold. When you're thinking about prices, it's difficult to think about prices in terms of dollars because the dollar itself is going to be losing value. So on a relative basis, stocks can go down, but the dollar can go down even more. And so it looks like stocks are going up. It's like, you know, trying to measure somebody's height, but you don't know how many inches are going to be in a ruler. So I can be 6 feet tall with a ruler, but if the ruler has 10 inches in a foot, you know, obviously I'm not getting taller just because the ruler is getting smaller. So people are going to be confused by the illusion that they're getting richer, even as they're actually getting poorer, if they just look at a price, a dollar price on their assets. So I always want to look at assets in terms of gold. And during the bubble, assets have gone up in value relative to gold, but they're going to come collapsing down during the deflation. But poor Harry Dent, you know, he's going to get wiped out even more by the deflation because the price of dollars relative to gold will probably go down a lot more than the price of the stocks that he's not buying.
Now, last couple of questions. Inflation, you know, if it's there, is really it's a tax. It's a hidden tax, isn't it?
Well, of course, because the source of inflation is government. That's why it's good to call it a tax, because it's the government that is imposing the inflation on the people, and it's doing it to fund its spending. So most people, when they think of taxes, it's, hey, the government takes my money, they levy a tax on me, and money goes from me to the government, and the government takes that money, and they give it to somebody else to spend. And so I have less money to spend, and now somebody else is spending my money. Well, the government has another way of getting your money, and that's through your purchasing power. So instead of taking your money away from you, the government just prints up some money and then gives that money to somebody else. And now that somebody else has money to spend that they didn't earn, and now they go out and spend it. But because they didn't earn it, they didn't help produce goods and services. So what happens is the people that get that new money, they go and buy stuff, prices go up. And now because prices go up, you can't buy as much stuff as you could have before because you don't have more money, but everything costs more. So let's say prices go up by 10%. Well, that's like a tax. That would be exactly the same if the government took 10% of your money so that now you had to reduce your consumption and you bought, you know, 10% less stuff. When they take your purchasing power through inflation, you arrive at the same result. You buy less stuff, not because you have less money, but because the prices have gone up. But those higher prices are effectively a tax, which is why I was very critical of Joe Biden's promise that Americans under $400,000 of income wouldn't have to pay anything for all the spending. I said that was a lie. They were going to pay the inflation tax, because the inflation tax actually falls heaviest on the lower income and middle income people. The very people that Biden claimed would be exempt from his taxes are the ones getting hit the hardest from his taxes.
Yes, and conveniently, of course, inflation also devalues the absolute debt that governments have. So in a way, what they're doing is basically shrinking their problem, but creating a bigger problem for everybody else.
Yes, they're screwing all of their creditors, the holders of U.S. Treasuries. But it's not just U.S. Treasury holders. When they create inflation, they destroy the value of dollar bonds, all kinds, corporate bonds, muni bonds, all bonds lose value, not just those issued by the U.S. government.
Absolutely. Now, my last question, Peter, because we've talked of sort of macro levels, but individual investors, right, watching what's going on at the moment and trying to figure out what to do. What's your perspective in terms of how investors should think about this?
Well, they should understand that inflation wipes out creditors and it wipes out paper wealth. But real wealth is not affected. If you own real things, tangible property, you know, equities in businesses, real estate, those assets will retain value because prices can go up when there's inflation. If you're a business and you're selling products, you raise the prices of those products. But if you own a bond and you're clipping a coupon, your coupon is stuck. And your principal is fixed in a certain quantity of money. And if inflation renders that quantity worthless, well, what you've got is worthless. But governments can print money, but they don't print stuff. So I want to own what the governments can't print. Real businesses, productive assets, capital, plant and equipment, real resources, minerals, you know, energy resources, agriculture. There's a lot of things that you can own and businesses that you can own. But I also want to own gold, because gold is going to be remonetized in the aftermath of this currency crisis. And, you know, the only way back to prosperity, that road goes through a gold standard. We're not going to get it relying on fiat currencies. Yeah, when lesser fiat currencies failed, when you had like an Argentine peso collapse, okay, you know, that's one thing. But the U.S. dollar, the primary reserve currency, if the dollar can fail, well, then anything can fail. I mean, how are you supposed to have confidence in the euro when you see the dollar collapse? I mean, who's to say the euro won't be next, or the Japanese yen? So how is Europe and Japan going to say, hey, don't worry, what happened to the U.S. dollar is not going to happen to us? Why would you think that? So you got to do something to change the dynamics. And okay, well, no, we're backed by gold now. We have gold reserves, and we're going to stop printing money. And that's how you can have confidence that what happened in America won't happen here.
Well, Peter, I appreciate your time today. And your debate with Harry Dent is on tomorrow. We'll put the links and things below. I do encourage people to go across, and it's a free discussion, very important debate. And I think there are some really, really important messages for people there to try and figure out that they can't just rely on central banks to get them out of this, that this is actually a serious situation that we're in, right?
Yeah. The next crisis, there is no bailout, because the central banks were able to bail everybody out before by printing money. But if the crisis is because the money they're printing is collapsing in value, they can't bail anybody out by printing even more currency that has less and less value. So you've got to bail yourself out, but you got to do it now. You can't wait until after the crisis, because if you're stuck holding a bunch of worthless currency, well, it's too late to do anything. You've got to use that currency now and pass it to somebody else, like a hot potato. But what you got to do is accumulate real things now, own real assets, and then the person who sold you those assets, they're the one that's stuck with the paper. When the music stops, they got nothing. You want to get real things, and I think you want to stay far away from the U.S. I think the U.S. is really at the epicenter of this crisis, which is why I think Harry Dent's call for owning U.S. Treasuries makes no sense at all, for another reason, in that, you know, you want to get far away from the United States. You don't want to be, you know, at ground zero, because I think this is not just going to be a currency crisis, but a sovereign debt crisis for the United States. I mean, we're about to raise the debt ceiling yet again. But, you know, at some point, it's not going to matter about the debt ceiling, because our creditors are going to impose a lending ceiling. They're not going to lend us any more money. And all the money is going to come from the Fed's printing press. And by then, you know, it's all over, because, you know, the dollar just implodes. But before that happens, you got to protect yourself.
Right. So the message, I think, today is there is a window of opportunity, right? If you understand what's going on, then capitalize on this window of opportunity, because it may not be open for that long.
Yeah. Look, it's been open for a lot longer than I expected. So to that extent, you know, but you're pressing your luck if you keep waiting, because, you know, it could shut any minute.
Peter, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us, and I look forward to the debate tomorrow.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.